After my experience with stand-up comedy, we wanted to learn more about the uniqueness of live performance. So Dan went to speak with two professionals who have made their living on live performance, Amy Fried and Kay Kostopoulos.
I'm Amy Fried, and I'm a playwright and an artist in residence here at Stanford University in the drama department. I've been here for 10 years.
I'm Kay Kostopoulos. I'm also a teacher in the drama department, professional actress and singer, and I've also been here for 10 years.
They've worked together on a number of projects, and they share a love for theater, for entertaining through experience. I asked them why live performance has such an appeal to its audience, and why the live experience is unique.
Because anything can happen. It's spontaneous. It's in action. I mean, that's the whole, that's why it's called acting, based on action. It's evolving before your eyes, and it can go anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And I mean, is it too mystical to say that there's something about your live spirit in the world as itself, embodying language, embodying thought and feeling, being willing to share that in a public forum with other live spirits that thought it was worth it to come out, is not only enhancing for the person that performs, but it is enhancing for the community that witnesses a person performing. And it's a way of saying yes to the human being and the human heart, which I still believe in, as a not a poetical term, but as a real term, as being primary to our valuation in life. Performance is a form of relationship. I don't think that looking at an object or an inanimate thing is a form of relationship. And one thing that's happening in the world now, and I think we should all be very aware of it and concerned about it, is that we are supplanting all forms of relationship with something that has to do with a relationship to something we can manipulate or tailor to our own desires or form to our own narcissism. That's a very different thing than living performance where there is a conversation, in effect, going on between those that are offering in performance and those that are offering by being there in response.
Relationship was a theme that kept coming back to, this interesting combination of give and take between audience and performer. Conversation really seems to be the best word to describe it, because both performers and audience must feed off each other if it is to be a successful production. But are there benefits to live performance, both attending and participating, besides simple entertainment?
Just for starters, my best friends in the world and my husband are people that I met in theater, that I met in theater school many years ago, and they continue to be very, very close to me. And anybody who's ever been in a play or live performance knows that you carry that relationship and that experience for a long time after the play is closed. I mean, it's not always the most positive thing in the world, and you never forget that either. But there are some friendships that just go on, and the glow stays with you for many years, and the memories are fond. And collaboration is everything in theater. That's the other thing that's missing. There isn't really a boss. It'll fall apart if anybody pulls out their piece of the puzzle. It can't sustain itself. It's not a full picture any longer. So we're all in there, and we're all dependent on one another. It's great training for anybody. I really would encourage anyone to take part in a play to learn about, team building and ensemble building and leadership. It's extremely, extremely important.
I think people really touch their God-given essences when they are making art. And when they're making art together, you're in a framework of, this sounds so mushy to say, but actually it's like love in action. It's like you are interacting with people the way our natures design us and their highest levels to interact. Mm-hmm. And the joy that it releases is really beyond description. And that's why people spend lives in relative poverty pursuing the arts, because they touch it touches them, and there's nothing else they want, because they recognize their nature in that. Sorry to hit your microphone, I'm getting excited. But the pleasure of that's beyond frivolous, and that's the thing that sometimes gets frustrating when you try to explain it to a world that's based on stuff and acquisition. And we all know that acquisition, or we all should know that acquisition does not equate with either happiness or the revelation of what your nature is. So there is an imperative, I think, to keep this language of being alive for the people that still crave it and seek it, and to bring it to the people that are suffering without it. And there's not one child who should ever grow up without being in touch with the living arts. You know, what is it we are giving young people as an inducement to live and be joyful in this world, you know, to have stuff and avoid crime. I mean, there's got to be more, something more positive, something deeper in what we are. We're not just intellects, money makers, or product inventors. And we may need to go back 200 years to find the language to talk about that again. But our world is sick in many ways, and all people want healing, want to be healing forces on Earth, and the arts are a tangible, structured, practical, artistic, engaged, formal way to do that. It's also related to your ability not just to express yourself, but your ability to have an opinion, your moral sense, your ability to have a voice that is connected to your conscience, to be able to speak up without fear, to be able to speak the truth to authority, all of these things that we value.
To have a voice, know how to use your voice from your core, from your center, not just a talking head that is detached from your soul and your heart and your feelings. Mm-hmm. All interconnected. That's what we teach, is that the voice and the body are one. They're not two separate entities. And the voice doesn't live in the head. It lives in the diaphragm, in the breath, in the life force.
I could really hear the passion in Amy's voice when she talked about the impact live performance has, or could have, in our world. Was it really such a big deal if it takes a backseat to other, more modern forms of entertainment? Sure, maybe people don't go out to plays as much as we used to, but I always figured that was just because they can be a sort of treat, maybe, a night out. If there are all these wonderful things live performance gives us, there should be no reason for us to stop going as much. Why would we throw away these things we supposedly can't get anywhere else? What else is so appealing to us that we would try and replace a life experience with it?
Well, I mean, technology, which is our friend, you know, and I think technology is glorious, but again, it's about detachment and not a live experience. I think that's part of it, while we're being led away. I think that fear also leads you away from human contact. People don't go out as much as they used to. They stay home, watch TV, really don't engage with the rest of the world. So, you know, and the world is a scary place, but it's a nice thing to dare to make contact with other people. You know, it's just easier to stay home and watch TV than it is to go out and pay money and see some live theater. So I think that's part of it.
Well, I think Kay can agree with this or not, but I think probably one of the first things we see going all the way is we've got a nation that can't listen, they are not orally tuned, they can't listen to
they're
a poem.
Used to sound bites and
flattening,
quick changes,
brutal,
you know, flashes,
vulgar,
over the internet,
sense-oriented culture,
intercuts, everything has to happen quickly. I mean, look at any commercials or even the sound level at movies is enormous, and there's always an explosion or a gun or something violent that has to be jarring. There isn't, rarely are there quiet moments in film or, you know,
right, 'cause it's totally
on television.
Driven.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And everything just goes by in a second.
Okay, so it's easier to just sit at home. That makes sense. We have the option to be entertained without having anything expected of us. But Amy and Kay think it also runs deeper than simple laziness. They think it has something to do with how we are trained to act as early as childhood.
Yeah, there's a tendency towards disconnect and not feeling and coolness. I have a 15-year-old son, and it's really all about being cool and not losing it. And that often, with a lot of my younger students, to get them in touch with their passions is difficult because they have been trained or conditioned to non-feeling.
Yeah.
And it's, as an actor, it's all about feeling and doing, not standing back and disconnecting, letting go. It's about engagement.
I think that's really true. You know, culturally and always, we're trained to be sort of remote, and I think I found certainly in my classes in Stanford over the years that the greatest satisfaction for people who are exploring performance is when they start making breakthroughs and daring to show who they are in front of other people and make that human connection. And as we know, In every aspect of being effective in the world, you have to be comfortable with who you are. Most people have inhibition about speaking their mind, speaking up, speaking out. It's the most common fear. I think, isn't it rated K over fear of death and fear of flying, fear of public speaking? So why is that? That's actually quite interesting when you unravel that and unpick it a little bit and go, what is the fear of saying what I think and feel when there's big groups of people present? You know, and it's profound, actually. And as you go on that journey, whether you're going to be a performer or you just want to learn about yourself, parts of yourself come together as a more integrated person. And as a more integrated person, I believe you also become a more integrated citizen of the world, you know, in terms of your power, usefulness, honesty, and fearlessness, which would anybody say we can't use that as a culture?
This vein runs much deeper than I first thought. It seems now like there are so many negative aspects to our society that could be improved by the experience and understanding live performance gives us, if only it were appreciated and supported more. But it's not like people are actively attacking the live arts. It's more like they're simply fading away from apathy.
It's an interesting shift. I mean, it's been true for a long time that we've been a consumer society, and of course, sales is kind of the engine that drives our world and our universe. I think as marketing forces have entered almost every aspect of our lives, we're struggling to deal with what it all means. We don't have a government that supports the arts at a level where they don't have to fight for the entertainment dollar. You know, there are other countries that have more of an understanding that live performance requires subsidy. Where that subsidy is where the culture puts its value. You know, we don't have that kind of, the arts have been struggling for support in this country at kind of an appalling level when you consider what the gross income of the country is. We don't facilitate it in America as a culture, arts as a culture, and going out as a culture. And I think that's been a struggle always here, partly because we're big and spread out. We don't have little old town centers that are 300 years old where everybody's used to going to the little opera center or the community center or the park where there was performance. So we're dealing with the vastness and loneliness of the American geography, among other things. That's been part of it. You compound that with the internet, where, you know, people can pretty much please themselves without ever having to be stretched into a new arena. It's very difficult to appeal on that level. That's why I think the arts really will get awakened as part of a general, or there's a larger cultural upheaval, in a way, that has to happen, I think, when people start missing that thing that's going away from us. Reawaken and rediscover the links that give us reason to live and reason to care, I think we're in trouble. It may go out of the world, you know, it's under threat. We're defending a form that's almost out of existence, which is, you know, oral storytelling, witnessing, sharing with the community. In that way, stories that theoretically are, capable of touching all of us, and the fact is that is going away, and it's an important thing to talk about.
Nobody has the patience or the attention span that it takes to sit and listen to something.
And consequently, the ability to sustain a thought of length, complexity, and resonance. And I was shocked when I started reading some of the speeches that were written in the 19th century. Oh, I can't remember. Sojourner Truth, maybe, in some of the speeches that were in the back of my Encyclopedia Britannica, those historic speeches. And I go, my God, nobody can write like this anymore because nobody can think like this anymore. The founders of our country, all of those men were thinkers, readers. They understood the architecture of the mind. Not only could they write eloquently, but they could speak and command a listening audience that was actually hungry to hear. Hear equals think. So we're moving towards sensation and out of the realm of intellectual construction, vision, visualization, and what Kay was mentioning also in favor of sensation-oriented culture that really is quite bereft emotionally and is truly suffering emotionally. I think we see that, I mean, in almost any kind of index you want to look at. And we're not facing our problems and not thinking about them. And I do think it's related to the ability to hear, listen, and think. And I do think that is related in part to the oral tradition and the live tradition that performance represents.
It's kind of a depressing thought to think that if this is the state of our world now, where will we be in 10 years or 50 years? What will the state of the live arts be then? We can't really answer that question here, but there is one thing we can be sure of, that there will always be people like Amy and Kay who love to perform and who know what it is you get out of live performance that you can't get anywhere else.
And it's the most wonderful combination of incredibly hard work and rigorous super focus and a kind of play, the play experience, playful experience that we don't often get to do past childhood. It's like elevated play to a sublime level at its very best. And if you're lucky enough to spend your life working in the arts, you know, it's as if you never give up your creative joy that I think belongs to all human beings. Almost the first thing besides mommy and eating is the pleasure in playing and making and being a supreme creator. That's what we are. That's what human beings are meant to do. Not push products at Walgreens, not sweep floors, not be slaves of other men, but to make things for joy. It's the opposite of everything bad in the world. You know, and we kill it in our children, in ourselves, in our culture, in each other, and we're mourning it our whole lives. And we don't know why we're so unsatisfied, why we're depressed, what's missing. And what's missing is the fact that we are each and every one of us gifted on a primary level, and we love to play with each other. And if people did that, our world would be very different.
At the end of things, I suppose it's worth noting the irony. There we were, Amy, Kay, and myself, sitting in Kay's office with a microphone between us, recording our thoughts on the merits of live performance. And we all knew that I had every intention to edit and alter their words in order to make the things that they said more powerful and effective to you, the listener, hearing my pre-recorded voice right now.
So, anyway, my soapbox just broke down. You'll edit me, I hope.
But all the editing in the world can't reproduce the experience of sitting next to Amy and Kay and having a conversation with them, of hearing their voices and seeing their faces and being a part of that conversation, not just a listener. And that's what liveness gives us, a sharpness of mind, a total sensory and intellectual experience, and an engagement that cannot be reproduced after the fact. It's there once, and then it's gone. It has to be experienced to be appreciated. And there's nothing that can ever replace that feeling.
What you see on live theater is what is right there. And also, it's really exciting for the actor. It's terrifying and wonderful at the same time. You can't go back and fix a mistake. It's spontaneous and, thrilling. It's a rush. And they get that kind of thrill that Amy's talking about, the thrill of creation, interaction, being alive. It's, you know, you're more alive at that moment than any other time.